Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, it is time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. I am still hooping it up on the West Coast. I'm getting a little delirious. We're recording, I guess, technically on a Thursday morning on my side of the country at this point, as I'm still in Vegas, early afternoon-ish on the East Coast. So it's fine. We're having fun. We've now reached the WNBA All-Star break, with All-Star festivities starting tomorrow, and All-Star game's going to be on Saturday. Really looking forward to getting out there and checking that out. We can start with some All-Star news, actually. Elena Deladon suffered an ankle injury. She was selected as part of Team Wilson during the All-Star draft over the weekend. Suffered an ankle injury. She's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks, which naturally takes her out of All-Star festivities. Ryan Howard of the Atlanta Dream getting the replacement selection. Ryan currently averaging career highs in points, rebounds, assists, two-point and three-point percentage. And as the Dream have gone on a six-game winning streak, she is averaging 23-5-5 during that stretch, including a 40 ball. She has been on fire from pretty much wherever she takes shots. Playmaking has perked up. Defense has been solid. Very happy for Ryan. Any surprise at all that this was the selection?
No, I think we mentioned it. We thought it'd be a Howard, and Ryan Howard has certainly earned it, especially with this stretch of play combined with the Dream also surging up the standings. So it's fun to see. Like, for me, it's like you saw the base of what they were building and what she was building, but the shot just wasn't falling. And part of me with the Dream calculus was, what's this look like if Ryan Howard is also just making shots? And now we have a clearer answer on what that is. So now you have Ryan Howard playing like this. Alicia Gray able to drive. Cheyenne Parker's been great inside. So it's been really fun to see it. And I like the dynamic of their top three. And it's fun to see like Ryan Howard actually get back to the scoring aspect and shooting well.
Yeah, she is posing such a problem for defenses. It's been fun to watch her growth. We talked about her quite a bit during her rookie season, in which she won Rookie of the Year, and deservedly so. Showcasing that growth, getting downhill, gaining a little bit more comfort. Still isn't perfect yet, but as she's getting more comfortable with the pull-up, as she's getting to the free throw line more, as she's just getting deeper into the paint on her drives, that's opening up passing windows for her. The playmaking is popping. And again, the shooting just pops wherever. Can get it whenever she wants to. And when she's on a heater like this, I don't know if there's a defender on earth that can really deal with her like that. So congrats again to Ryan Howard. Also, it does just stink that Elena Deladon has suffered yet another injury. She's having herself quite a campaign as well.
Man, I would just love for Elena Deladon to just have a clean bill of health, just a runway to just play the game and enjoy the game, because she's had an impact this year. She's played very well. She's very important to the Mystics. So it's kind of a shame. You know, I was hyping up the whole villain origin story thing. And I was like, well, we're just going to have to wait. So hopefully she can get right. Important stretch for the Mystics to me. You know, I think you got an opportunity to explore your offense. You're going to miss ED, but if you can find some things to build around her, get your guards headed in the right direction, you could feel better about things in a couple weeks.
Yep. We're going to definitely keep an eye on the Mystics offense. We'll have a little bit more commentary on that next week. Just a quick note on Elena Deladon, averaging a little over 18 points per game this year, 52% on twos, 39% on threes, 96% from the line, so flirting with 50-40-90. Six boards, a career high in assist for Elena Deladon as she's seeing more attention. Now, some of that is baked in with some of the concerns that I have in terms of spacing around her, but she is passing the ball well, finding open teammates. So, again, hope she gets well soon, and another congratulations to Ryan Howard. While we're still on All-Star stuff, we got the announcement earlier in the week about who is participating in the skills competition on Friday, and it is going to be a four-team format. In a literal four-team format, as pairs of teammates are going to be rocking this out to win it. So we have Team Aces with Chelsea Gray and Jackie Young participating. Team Dream, Alicia Gray and Cheyenne Parker. Again, this was announced before Ryan Howard became the replacement, so I would imagine we probably would have got Alicia and Ryan for this competition, if not. But we got Alicia and Cheyenne Parker. Sabrina Ionescu and Courtney Vandersloot representing the New York Liberty. And Arike Ogunbowale and Satu Sabally representing the Dallas Wings. Do you have an early prediction for this one, Steve?
The Liberty. I go back to last year. where Sabrina Ionescu very quickly showed the world how badly she wanted to win the skills challenge in multiple ways. I don't think that changes. So I'm going with the Liberty.
That's a really good pick, honestly, because we both got a good laugh out of that one because we hosted a watch party for it. I was in the comments for that when you were holding it down as I was trying to travel to Chicago to see things happen. But yeah, Sabrina just at 100% effort while everyone else was trying to have fun with it was funny. It's like, oh, she really wants this. If that competitive streak continues, I would imagine the Liberty going to have a good shot at it. I may agree with you, honestly. I would keep an eye on Dallas, though.
Really?
Especially with just the pure speed of Arike and the ball handling ability. If she gets the jumper to go early, I think they're going to have a good shot. Like, the jumper's what's going to raise the brow with Team Wings, though. Because both Arike and Satu can run a little hot or cold with the jumper. But if they got it, they have the speed, they have the ball handling, I think, and the passing ability, I think they can knock it out. So, go ahead.
I thought you were going to go with Team Aces.
You know, they have a great chance to win this.
Wow. I was trying to segue to being respectfully messy. I think if the Aces had made a sub, I'd probably pick them.
Mm.
Just in the specific contest. But
I see. Okay. All right. We can leave it right there then. That's fine. What's up? Wow. Okay. Let's transition to the other event that's going to happen on Friday, the 3-point contest in which I and various others were trying to figure out who was in the darn thing. And we finally got that announcement today, like less than 30 minutes ago as we start recording. But we do have the participants, Jackie Young from the Aces, Sabrina Ionescu from the Liberty, Kelsey Mitchell from the Indiana Fever, Arike Agumbawale from the Dallas Wings. Those are your four all-star representatives. We have two non-all-stars this year, which is exciting. Sammy Whitcomb is back after participating in 2021. And Dejanay Carrington from the Connecticut Sun hopping in here. I am intrigued. One, I'm glad that we have some outside participants because last year there was a lot of chatter and I was part of that chatter. Like, hey, there are some really good three-point shooters in the league that deserve to be here. I don't like that we're just limiting it to all-stars. I do understand some of the like back-end logistics of why that may be the case. But just from like an exposure standpoint and a merit standpoint with some of the shooters that we have in the league, would have been nice to see outside shooters. And so we got a couple this year. We know Sammy can shoot. Dejanay Carrington has made steps with her shots. The volume hasn't been there. And that's where my brow kind of raises. Where it's like, huh, I wonder how she does, especially in a situation like this with the rack and stuff. So I'm curious to see what her her experience is going to be like in this contest.
It's funny you mentioned that. Dejanay was my sleeper.
Hmm.
You know, I wanted to go Jackie Young, but then I remember I said, hey, watch out for Kelsey Plum last year, and she got 14 points, so I'm not going to do that again. I think Dejanay's got an outside shot of getting this done. It depends on what goes on. Sammy Whitcomb is the one for me.
Hmm.
I remember the last time she was in the three-point contest. And I was like, oh no, we're definitely gonna see Sammy Whitcomb and Allie Quigley. And then Jonquel Jones was like, absolutely not. So I'm gonna go with Sammy. Who you got?
You got Sammy in the revenge. Honestly, I kind of feel like Sabrina wins this one. Like, one, I just don't think enough has been made of the shooting season that she's having this year. Like, there were early rumblings heading into the year, like, okay, what is this shift? What's Sabrina going to look like with more talent coming in? You're bringing in Breonna Stewart. You bring in Jonquel Jones. Figuring out all those pieces. You bring in Courtney Vanderstoot as well. That should shift Sabrina off the ball. But, like, what would the integration period look like? She's just been, like, the best shooter in the W, it feels like. She's been killer on spot up. She's been killer coming off screens this year. Three locations. She's getting them on pull-ups as well. She's been nasty. And I think just her shooting form kind of sets up nicely for her using the rack in particular. Sabrina's probably my pick for this one.
Wow. I did not see that coming. I'm stunned and shocked, and I am surprised that you somehow managed to delay and sneak all Liberty and Sabrina praise into this segment.
It's such a nasty narrative you are trying to build here. It's fine, though. It's fine. I think Sabrina's able to get this done, so we'll see what happens. To the NBA side, brief news note, The Pistons and Isaiah Stewart agreeing to a 4-year, $64 million extension. I also just find it funny that that news broke like an hour after we recorded the first pod this week. So that was great. Very cool indeed. Anyway, 4-year, 64 for Isaiah Stewart. Steve, what was your initial thoughts when that news came down?
Number one was good for Isaiah Stewart to get paid, get rewarded. You never want to go right to the transactional talk. That's a human element. And he's had, you know, I want to say up and down, but it's been a journey. He's been tested as a player, had to have some belief in his game, had to grow his game. So it has to feel good to have that work pay off to a degree, see that they still believe in you, and to go ahead and commit to that with some more dollars. So salute to him. I'm still intrigued with Isaiah Stewart. I love the rookie year from him. Again, great screening, great energy, great effort. Took some step backs in that department as it went on, but was working on expanding his game. Clearly, they believe in what he's shown them, and there's like more to it. He can play four, he can play five, in theory. That's fun. Here is where my concern comes. My only concern with this is just purely roster construction for the Pistons. And just overall looking at it, and I think a couple pods ago, I was like, I like what Detroit does, and then I look at all of it together, and I'm like, wait, how does this work? You paid Marvin Bagley. You paid Isaiah Stewart. You drafted Jalen Duren. You traded for James Wiseman. I get all of them. They are now all on the same team. And again, I get the Wiseman thing. It's low cost. I'm always going to be a sucker for acquiring a talented prospect on the low. Like, you just get a chance to see if your team can now maximize what they bring to the table. So I get that. Mm-hmm. But I'm worried about all of them getting in each other's way. How are they going to separate from each other? Who's going to be the guy that you're going to go to? You've invested in all of them to a certain degree. So there's no natural like equalizer there. And you're kind of locked into some of these two big lineups because of the commitment. It's different when you draft someone or you got a couple people, you know, you're waiting. No, all of these people that you need one of them to pop. And they all need time to pop. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
So that's where my mind went. Where were you at?
Like, I like it. Like, I think it's fine value for Isaiah Stewart. Like, I guess I knew he was extension eligible. I just didn't know if this was something that Detroit was going to come to agreement with. I thought he would have been, because of their roster construction, to your point, I figured Isaiah Stewart would have been a let's let him get to restricted free agency and see what other teams do and see what the market does and then go from there. But I think based on, one, just the person that he is. Like, you mentioned the effort and energy that he plays with. But, like, you read James Edwards and some of the people that have a real pulse on the Pistons and are on that beat. That entire organization loves him. They love what he's about. They love the kind of person he is. They love the kind of worker he is. And, you know, the work in particular, that translates to the court, where you see what he does on the offensive glass. You see the kind of screens that he can set. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that they felt like not just a player, he's a person that they want to take care of as early as possible. So that made sense for me. But yeah, I just have the same concerns. Because I think with Stu, as strong as he is and as much energy he played with, he is slightly undersized for the five. But I ultimately feel like that may be the best spot for him. And because of who they've drafted and the rest of the roster, like, I don't know how much time he gets at the five, which has led to the more spacier experiment with him. Let's see if he can add that three ball. Let's see if he can actually space the floor so we can unlock some two ball, some two big lineups. And he has taken steps as a shooter, but it's not at the level that you need it to be in terms of efficiency or volume. And I just don't know what the threshold is for him for defenses to care if he's at the four. Like, at the five, that threshold becomes a little bit lower. If you're at the five, you just need to be like 34-35%. With moderate volume, and teams at least have to think about it, especially if you're running some delay stuff or whatever. If you're at the four, you're being defended by other fours, more than likely. That's going to take away some of those perimeter opportunities that you want. So I don't love that Detroit's kind of pigeonholing themselves into a bunch of two big lineups. So that's where I just worry, like, does this set up another move? And if it does set up another move, who is it going to involve? Because it's something that we talked about when the Wiseman trade first happened. It's like, I understand why they want to take the gamble. I don't know if they should have been the team to take the gamble because of what they were already investing in Isaiah Stewart in particular. And so now you're also at, it just feels like a lot. And I think trying to balance the roster is going to be very important for Detroit, which is something that I felt like I said last year. And now that you're bringing Cade back into the fold, I feel like you nailed the top of your draft this year. What thoughts are? I'm curious to see what this Detroit team looks like conceptually. Like, I'm not sure I'm going to make like the play-in, but watch out for them in the play-in prediction like I was flirting with last offseason. I just have a lot of questions about how they are going to round this thing out.
I'm sure I will. Don't worry. I got you. I'm sure I will. I'm already talking myself into it after watching Asar Thompson just do stuff to Toronto.
He was gracious.
First play of the game. Great man. Way to come off that screen. Here's a block. Let's go. And I was like, okay. Interesting point you had there with Isaiah Stewart. And I wonder how much of it, does Detroit just need one of them to know that they are the five, to be the five, to be that guy? Or is the bit going to be all of these bigs are at their best at the five? And now you end up in a scenario where the ability to pop in space is cool, except your screens are now switches. And so now we're kind of in the same boat. We're now, what are we getting out of it? That's where my mind goes to. Like, I don't want to. It reminds me of Atlanta to a degree. I'll put it that way. And now you have multiple of them. So can you find the right pieces? As far as Detroit goes overall, I'm intrigued. Like, I trust Coach Monty Williams' playbook to be able to smoothen out some of the offense, at least purely from an execution standpoint. That should be a lot easier for them set-wise. I've liked Cade and Ivy's chemistry together. Obviously, we need to see more of it. But I think there's enough where we've seen what Monty Williams can do with multiple playmakers. You got rollers. You got some shooting or more shooting than you had. If they can get their defense to a level, and I'm not going to go word for word with my Sacramento point that I used last year. If they just get their defense to a level where it's like, hey, we just stopped hurting ourselves. We are just base. We are active. We're not necessarily great, but we're going to try hard. And we're not going to break down and just hand you plays over and over again. Mm-hmm. If they can get there, I'm intrigued. Because the transition should be fun.
I got you. Like, I think there is a lot of low-hanging fruit to grab with that Detroit defense. I do think just in terms of what their overall personnel is, I don't know what their ceiling is this year. But also, they're still very early in their rebuild still. So, like, this isn't close to being the finished product. There's a reason they were in talent flyer, talent accumulation mode. There's a reason why they took on Joe Harris in the cap space instead of trying to look for who's the splashy vet that can take us to the next level, like Fred VanVleet in Houston, for example. There's a reason Detroit wasn't in the market for one of those type moves yet. So, like, they still recognize where they are. But, yeah, I'm just curious to see how they put this together. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to bring it back to Isaiah Stewart real quick. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just the threes for me. It was once I saw him, like, driving from the perimeter, I was like, oh, I'm intrigued. Mm-hmm. And then once it was like, oh, he's doing that and he's screening still. He's going back to screening. Ah, okay. Now I see the vision. So we'll see how it plays out.
Gotcha. We will see indeed. Wow. yeah, I'm glad you brought up Detroit and their summer league still. Let's get to some more summer league talk. We talked quite a bit about the top guys in the lottery on the last episode, some of their early thoughts there. Wanted to circle back very quickly to some players that we might have missed, but before that, let's talk about a game that we had the pleasure of calling on the NBA app /League Pass. We got to hang out for Blazers Hornets. It was a 4-point win for the Blazers. Shaedon Sharpe with 26 in that one. Nick Smith Jr. absolutely lost his mind with 33 points in that one. It felt like the best game of the summer for Brandon Miller. One, how much fun did you have? And two, like, what were some of your primary takeaways from that game?
I had a lot of fun. It was a fun game. Shaedon Sharpe's playmaking was great. Jabari Walker was all over the place. Loved his energy and effort on both ends of the floor. He's been fun to watch. It was easily Brandon Miller's best game of the summer. On both ends of the floor, I felt just way more comfortable. You saw the vision a lot more with him and what he's trying to accomplish. I think Nick Smith Jr., offensively, you saw what he can do, what he can create. Kai Jones is all over the place. Michael DeVoe just had Nick Smith Jr. going through it, trying to recover and pick and roll. It was just automatic. hey, I'm going to take one dribble, I'm a snake, you can't get back in front of me. So it was a lot of fun. What were your thoughts?
I think for me, it was, one, Brandon Miller. I was very impressed with what he did. You already touched on most of it, but his intention on getting downhill in that game and being able to beat closeouts the way that he was, be able to pump and go the way that he was, get to the line. I think that was very impressive, especially in light of some of the burst questions or first step questions that he may have. And he'll still have to solve some of that as we get into some preseason, then regular season games. But it was nice to see him kind of seek out, okay, this dude's closing out, this top foot's a little loose, let me attack, let me catch him off balance, let me get downhill, let me get to my spots. That was some good stuff. The passing from there flowed. I like that quite a bit. I'm glad you touched on Kai Jones. A lot of Kai Jones at the five in this game. A lot of Kai Jones drop, which was, let's say, inconsistent with Kai Jones in the drop. He got a little close to the level. I felt a little bit better about it. But his activity just pops all over the place. And even when it feels like he's quote-unquote wrong in the scheme, he can just cover so much ground and erase his own mistakes with his insane leaping ability. He's just a fun player to root for. He's a fun player to watch. Like, he's someone that I hope works out, if not in Charlotte, then somewhere else. He has very, very, very rare athletic traits. And if he's able to put that together and become, like, a legit defensive player, whether that's him being a switch guy or they're just going to have him closer up to the level, have him hedging out and using the activity that way, and if he's able to screen and dive, or I guess just slip and dive at that point, because the screening, you know, there are some question marks there. If he's able to carve out his niche on either end of the floor, like, you are looking at a very fun rotational big. So I enjoyed the Kai Jones minutes. Michael DeVoe, huge game against the Spurs over the weekend. Quiet in the stat sheet, 12.7 assists, doesn't really pop off the page for you, but you mentioned his control and pick and roll popped immediately. It did not feel like Nick Smith Jr. could solve how to defend Michael DeVoe. And even if it wasn't Michael setting up scoring opportunities for himself, because he was able to get downhill with that ease, play at his own pace, snake off the pick, get to the paint, he forced Charlotte's defense to react. Like, we were talking about it throughout the broadcast of how deep the drop was for Charlotte. And it kind of turned into late switches by default because Michael DeVoe was just able to get into the paint pretty much every time he tried to run a pick and roll. So, like, it was just fun watching him dictate terms in that way. Quick shout out to Justin Robinson and his defense for Charlotte. Coming off the bench, immediately picking up full court press. That was fun. I'm trying to think, is there anyone else I want to shout out here? Just another quick hat tip to the shot making of Nick Smith Jr. Really got going in the fourth quarter. I had a lot of fun with that one. It felt like the Blazers were going to take off with it early. And we talked through the broadcast, like, Charlotte has not won a game this summer yet. Between the California Classic and now the Vegas portion of things, Charlotte roars back in the second quarter. Looks like they're making a real run in the third. Like, it became a really fun summer league game. I enjoyed myself. On the summer league portion, we want to zoom out a bit. Any guys that you didn't mention on the early week pod that you want to shout out, or anyone you want to have some updated thoughts on?
Let's talk about it. This is the fun part, and I feel like I'm leaving some people out. Do you want to talk about Jordan Walsh at all? Do you have any additional Jordan Walsh thoughts? Because I've seen a lot of people talk about Jordan Walsh. I figured I'd ask.
That man's good. That man's good. He already looks, he feels like a hashtag draft good basketball players candidate for me already, where it's like, how did he slip out of the first round? With as many teams that are looking for wings that can credibly defend multiple positions and also knock down shots from the perimeter. And considering how many draft night trades Boston made, like, all right, cool, we're at 25. Actually, no, we're not. Now we're at 31 or whatever it is. No, we're not. We're going to trade back again. And they still end up with Jordan Walsh. I'm not sure how you let that happen. It's weird to say, like, wing depth is an issue for Boston, considering they have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. But, like, behind them, especially in light of losing Grant Williams, it was worth questioning. Like, okay, so who is the backup, like, three for this group? I think Jordan Walsh can step right in. So I think I think he stepped right in. So those are my updated Jordan Walsh thoughts. Gave him the quick shout on Monday, but yeah, he's good.
Oh, I was not expecting that. You got the W there, bud. I'm not gonna lie. let's see. How do you feel about Mr. Grady in Toronto? Because, and before you go, I'll let you sit in that for a quick second. The only thing I'm concerned with is just the predetermining of reads right now. That'd probably be my biggest area of opportunity for him. There's too many times where he, on drives or pick and roll, where it just seems like he's hitting the A button, you know? Uh-huh. Like he's got the icons up. He's already making the pass. And it's like, hey, no one's moved. you got to engage the big. You got to force them to do something. The pass is automatically going to be there. So that's intriguing. Did you have any thoughts about him?
I think my like 10,000 foot view of Grady is that he is going to thrive on a team that can create advantages for him to attack and flow off of. I think he reads the floor pretty well. And I think part of the predetermining for him is that I think he's just wired to keep things going. And I think entering this summer league situation with Toronto, where I will just say it was not the greatest roster selection. I don't think it was the greatest build of a summer league roster. And so I think some of the plays that he would expect to be there based on where he was and where he was catching the ball and or relocating a little bit and catching going immediately, those pockets just weren't there and he was expecting them to be. And so I agree with you that he's going to have to read that kind of stuff a little bit better. But I also think it was just a general adjustment period for him. Like, oh, this is a little bit different than what it was in college. Oh, they're not moving this way after I attack off this drive. But I do think playing with some better drivers, playing with some better players, like you'll see the shot pop a little bit more because he didn't shoot well or hasn't shot well this summer from three. But we know he can knock those down. So I don't have any major concerns with him yet. I just didn't think this was a great context for him to shine.
Okay, makes sense. The drives from Omax Prosper in Dallas, those are fun. And it's not necessarily just about the success rate of them. It's just projecting what he could do in Dallas and what we've seen Dallas have success with. If you're going to bring defense and the ability to drive, there's a place for you in Dallas. And so with the way that they're able to open up and get teams in rotation and keep the ball moving and attack closeouts and get to their drive and kick, I like him potentially being able to add to that whenever his time comes. So that had me intrigued. What is your list, Mr. Nekias Duncan?
Oh, I can go pretty quickly with mine. I'm being cognizant of like my 38 player list, so I'll try not to do that. We will start in Minnesota since I didn't get to do that on Monday. Josh Minot and Leonard Miller, both incredibly fun. For Josh, honestly, for both of them, we got to see where the shot lands. I think that's going to dictate a lot of what kind of playing time they can carve out in light of how crowded Minnesota's front court is. But both of those dudes are incredibly active, fun athletes. Josh Minot in particular, he flies around as a shot blocker. He's a lot of fun. And just watching him move, like, I don't think they're the same type of player. But in terms of the movement patterns, and particularly offensively with him slipping screens and stuff against the switches that Minnesota has seen in summer league, he gives me like Brandon Clark vibes with how quickly he's able to slip into space and make himself available. So I had a lot of fun with that, but killed it on the offensive glass, flew around defensively. A lot of fun. Leonard Miller. I don't know where the shot lands. I think he's 6 of 14 from 3 so far in summer league. So not super high volume, but you'd like to see him taking and making those shots. I don't know where that lands on the NBA level yet. But good Lord, he has like a 99th percentile motor. He's a really good athlete. And I think back to the New Orleans game early in summer league, where I think this was late in game. They score. New Orleans tries to push after a make. Leonard gets lost trying to match up. He finds himself in the paint. EJ Liddell is above the break, getting ready to take a three. This man turns from the restricted area, runs out, jumps, blocks the three-point shot, gets the ball, and gets a fast break bucket. And I was like, oh, yeah, this might be a little bit different. And you add in like what he does on the offensive glass as well, like has a little bit of ball skills. I'm very intrigued by Leonard Miller. And he was someone that popped for G League Ignite this past season as well. So like there's a lot of potential there. I love that. I just love him as a prospect. I don't know how much he pops in Minnesota because, again, front court is going to be crowded. I don't think he's someone you could play at the three. And I really have questions. I have some questions about him playing the four as well, just because, again, I don't know where the shot lands. But that's a dude that I would not be surprised if we hit like game 14, game 15. It's like, huh, Leonard Miller's lobbed 18 minutes tonight. That's interesting. And it just keeps going. Like, he just feels like someone that you're not going to be able to keep off the floor with the energy that he provides. I had a lot of fun with him. Keon Ellis. Most fun defensive player in summer league for me. Or at least on the perimeter. Led all perimeter players in stocks, steals plus blocks. He's leading all of summer league in steals right now. But it's not just ball handler being sloppy. He picks it up. We got on-ball steals for him. We got him helping from the nail. We got him picking off stuff in transition. We got him roaming off the ball, making tags, digging down on the big and stripping it from there. Big man tries to post up, get into a pivot, turns the face around. Here comes Keon Ellis behind him, ripping it from him. That man has been everywhere defensively. A whole lot of fun. Also, very quietly, shooting 38% from three. With a few self-created threes in there. Like, had three threes made against, I think, Chicago. And two of those were coming off of pick and rolls. And it was like, okay. I don't know how much he's going to be able to do that on the NBA level or in Sacramento in particular because of the roster that they have. But it's interesting that he is making strides with the shot. And he's showing a level of comfort of, okay, if you're ducking under, I can get into this. Or if I run you off the screen, I can get into the sidestep. I tweeted it earlier. He's an NBA player. I don't know how much of a runway he gets in Sacramento. I feel like I had nice things to say about Keon last summer league when we did this pod. But he's so much fun. He's good. And then I'll just give a couple of quick shout out to some shooters. Hunter Tyson, averaging 19-7 in summer league so far, shooting 40% from three. Like the way he moves off the ball. Like the footwork and the shot prep when he's ghosting screens. I think, 6'8", 6'9", so you can play the three or the four. I think he profiles better as like a four if you want to maximize the space that he provides. But I like that. Put the ball on the deck a little bit for Denver. So quick shout out to him. And then also, back and healthy, I guess, Sam Merrill, 19 points a game in summer league, shooting 48% from three on over 10 attempts. Welcome back. I hope you land somewhere. I think that concludes my list right now.
Awesome. All right. So we're going to do a new segment here. Going to try it out real quick. And this is where Steve tries to identify if people were on Nekias's list, or if Steve is surprised this person was not on Nekias's list. Are you ready?
Okay, this should be good.
Yeah, soft launch. Brandon Williams, averaging 21 a game in summer league. Little surprise. What happened,
brother? You know my Brandon Williams thoughts. I didn't think I needed to rehash those, but that is a very fun pick and roll creator.
Okay, Max Christie showing some promise offensively, showing some aggression. 19 a game in Vegas.
I believe I gave him the quick shout out on the last pod. If I didn't, then I just apologize. Like, I know I gave Colin Castleton a shout from the Lakers. But yeah, Max Christie's having himself one heck of a summer. He deserves his props.
Okay. Let's see. Peyton Watson?
I'm intrigued. Want to see a little bit more.
Jake LaRavia on ball reps?
Also intrigued. Didn't make my list, but doing some good things.
Usman Dieng?
That's one I should have just had on my list. Because I was in Cox.
We got one.
Yeah. Because I was in Cox for the Thunder game, which one, really fun Chet game. I tweeted about Jalen Williams and his voice just reverberating around the entire gym with him barking out defensive assignments. Usman looks a little bit more comfortable with the ball in his hands, a little bit more decisive. And like, we saw some of the drives from him last year, so it's not a super big surprise, but it's nice to watch him build off of that. Again, we're keeping the eye on the shot. That's going to dictate a lot, but it's easy to see why OKC likes him. Endless limbs, ball skills, sees the floor pretty well, can defend. A lot of fun things happening in OKC.
That's going to conclude my list right there. Just want to do a couple quick things before you take us to the next part of the pod. Mm-hmm. Be respectfully messy here really, really quickly.
Okay.
Number one. Shout out to Jarrett Jack, doing a great job coaching the Detroit Summer League team. He had a hilarious in-game interview in the last game where he literally was just coaching the whole time. He had no time for it. And it was probably one of the greatest segments I've ever seen in my life. So I wanted to make sure I gave that a shout out because he was literally just coaching the whole time. Attack him! Immediate pull-up three. We got to go to the rim! So that was fantastic. I just wanted to just drop that dime real quick. What you got, Nekias?
I think for me, before we move, just the in-game interviews. I love them conceptually. I just don't know if I like him in practice.
I'm afraid I've got some bad news, Nikias. As soon as the Noel Quinn one happened, where they asked her a question, she gave the answer, and then it actually happened immediately after on the court. Mm-hmm. Nah, they are here to stay, buddy. We are going to trip into some gold.
Yeah, like, I get it. Like, I really do. Again, I love the concept of let's get some real-time insight from coaches that can maybe dig in a little bit. Like, I don't think we're ever going to get, like, full-blown calls and all the different stuff on the broadcast. Like, one, is not going to want to for very obvious reasons. But two, like, what is going to be the, I guess, the retention rate or the acceptance rate on stuff like that? Because, like, I would love that. I think you would love that. But general audience, would they get that enough to know why that's awesome? I don't know.
Why? What's awesome? Just,
like, if they're actually, yeah, like, they're actually just calling out sets and stuff. Like, okay. We'll be able to, yeah. So that's what
we'll circle back to that one. Keep going. Oh.
All right, well, we will bring that one back soon. But yeah, also, it just feels like really inconvenient for the coaches as they are trying to bark out instructions and have an earpiece that may or not work, may or may not have volume issues. And now you're trying to bark out instruction while also saying, hey, man, I can't hear you. Can you repeat that? And it's the whole, like, That also didn't feel like a great viewer experience either as we're watching, like, live technical difficulties. So, I don't know. I'm just like, yeah, find a pocket during a timeout, talk, and then play it during the game. That's how I would go about it. But I'm with you. Like, it is here to stay. It's just me voicing my opinions. Let's dig into the mailbag real quick. Unless you have any final Summer League thoughts you want to get into.
Nah, we're good. Get some questions.
All right, let's get into the mailbag. Thank you to those who have sent in questions. And as I always say when we get into the mailbag questions, you don't have to wait for, like, a tweet prompt or anything. We normally drop the email address in the pod description. If you're at work, you're bored, at home, whatever the case may be, or you're watching a game, you have a question, you want to shoot it to us, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We will get to them. Like, we have in our pod history, we've had, like, full-blown mailbag episodes. Sometimes we just sprinkle them in, like this. So second half pod, gonna get into some mailbag questions. So send them in. Don't be shy. We get to them. So let's start with this one from Lyndon, a Summer League themed question, which feels appropriate. What should I watch for in rookies playing in Summer League? Most people disregard the games and don't care if a player goes 1-for-10, but will race and celebrate if they have a great performance. What in-game skills should I watch for that will tell of progression or potential?
This is a fun question. Salute to you, Lyndon, for this one. I get the tennis match aspect that you're talking about, the validation, the this guy's bad, this guy's good, all that. Let's Euro step past all that for now. Just throw it over the top rope. If we circle back to it, we will. Couple different ways you can go about it. And this is a lot easier when you knew rookies or certain guys were going to play 4 or 5 games guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So now you've got to get a little more creative and apply kind of the logic of returning players to some of these rookies. It's about building a base to me. Mm-hmm. You're building a base. It's a first look of sorts to, okay, what does this player or this prospect look like in this setting? Just this setting. More spacing, more pick and roll. What are we seeing there? And then what are they doing there that could help that team that mm-hmm. they're going to be with later? I think that's kind of part of how you want to start your process. I always say try not to go into it looking for one specific thing at the start. Like, if you go into it just saying, hey, I want to see the shot, that's fantastic. But you're going to miss out on so much of the other stuff. And that's going to be important to building your base and your understanding of this player. So just try and keep an open mind at first, you know? I think of it more as like a checklist of sorts. I think basketball is subjective, so everyone's going to have different things that stick out to them. And they're going to have different things that they may find intriguing. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like, okay, what's the drive look like? What's the pick and roll look like? What happens when they get a swing? Defensively, what's the activity on ball? What are the rotations off ball? And then you notice time and time again, okay, let's take Brandon Miller, for example, right? Mm-hmm. He's had a pretty, not linear, but we have enough of a base of games to be able to see the difference. And so when you go to his start, you're looking, okay, I see what he could do offensively. Shots not falling. I see the playmaking. That's fantastic. Defense. Mm. Mm-hmm. footwork doesn't look great, using his arms a lot. Keep that in your back pocket. So now you can see a game like he had against Portland where, oh, the defense looked a little bit more solid. The off-ball stuff pops a little bit better. The shooting looks better when the shots are going down. He's hunting his own shots and the footwork is there. So you can kind of build on that that way. That makes sense?
Yeah.
That's the ideal way you want to do it. So you keep an open mind. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think the secondary part is just looking at what that team can do and what that player can do for your team. Like Ausar Thompson's defense now stands out to me more. His off-ball defense, the rotations, the activity, the rebounding, the pushing and transition, the drives. That's a lot of stuff he can do. Yeah. And so now it's like, oh, I think I underrated just how much he could bring to the table. It may not be all of this, but hey, this could be a piece of it. And now it's just, hey, can you drive closeouts? So what are your thoughts about it?
I think for me, like there are some general things I look for, like the big umbrella processing speed, just how quickly do you read things on the floor? And I think for me, like, because I think my earnest answer is it depends on the player. Like if you are looking at a Scoot Henderson, I'm looking more at, okay, what type of reads are you making? How quickly can you make them? If it's someone like Brandon Miller, who I project to be in more of an off-ball role, okay, when to your point about what happens when they get a swing, okay, how quickly are you doing something if the defense is tilted? If the closeout ain't there, how quickly are you getting to your shot? Or are you fumbling the ball? You're trying to see what else is happening, then you're taking a contested three. Are you immediately catching and driving? If you do catch and drive, how often do you look for your shot versus how often do you look for passing window? And so it's like archetype based for me, but like conceptually, it's more so like, okay, how quickly are you seeing things and how quickly are you doing things? We will deal with the results. And then that kind of digs into like for a player that may catch and go immediately. Okay, is your handle tight enough to really puncture that at the NBA level right now? Yes or no? I can get into those sub questions for specific players, but I do try to kind of branch it from there, if that makes sense. Because, like, it's summer league. The context is not going to be ideal. The rosters aren't always going to be built for optimal, like, efficiency and stuff like that. Also, regardless of how good your team may be, you may be playing 3 or 4 games in general. So, like, that sample size statistically is not going to be great. If you're shooting 80% from 3 or if you're shooting 16% from 3, it's 4 games. So that isn't a ton to take from that anyway. It's going to be process stuff for me. Are you taking the right shots? Does your shot prep look good? If a team pressures you, are you able to adjust and do so cleanly? Like, how are you react to the different things that you see? So it's a lot of what Steve has already said. And then I can just kind of get into more specific, like, checklist things, depending on who the player is, what their archetype is. But I think that also helps with, you know, depending on what team this guy was drafted on, or if it's an undrafted guy who he signed with, it's easy to project. Okay, so he can attack in this way. I think that fits well with this player on this roster because he's going to create these opportunities for this guy to be able to attack off of, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where the team context comes in as well.
Yeah, and off of that, it's always interesting because depending on what the player is, every team is looking for something from their guys. So if I know you can score, I would like to see something else.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be mad that you scored well at Summer League or you look to score at Summer League. But what else did you do around it? Was the playmaking there? Was the defense there? Did you contribute to other things than winning? If I know you can defend, I want to see something else. What's the offensive aggression like? Are you making quick decisions? Are you driving closeouts? Are you looking for shots? That's where it gets interesting. Because I'm sure there are a lot of box scores where people are like, wow, that's a great game. And it's like, yeah, it is. But he went 8 for 22 and I already knew he could do that. Mm-hmm. What did I gain? Or you're soaking up more of that summer league usage, and so it looks great. But hey, you have to do what you just did in a much tighter window with this other team. So that's a great play that you just made. But you're not going to get the chance to come off a stagger and then come off pick and roll and then get the ball back more times than not. You're gonna have to package that up into a tighter window. So that's where it's like you have to try and understand what the purpose is, the context, and every team is different, every player is different. I hope this is a fun answer. This is a fun question.
Yeah, I like it. Like, I have a lot of fun. Like, as you were, like, answering this, I was thinking about, like, Bam came to mind for me. And, like, for me personally, this is fresh off the, like, the whole Ekpe Udoh thing, et cetera, et cetera. Like, for me, I didn't know he could dribble. That man started dribbling. I was like, okay, cool. But, like, I was, watching his first summer league game. Like, he's just pushing after misses consistently. He's just bringing the ball up. He's self-creating. I was like, oh, this is a lot. Miami didn't ask him to do that, to actually bring it up after misses until what, year halfway through year two, maybe year three. But like those seeds were already laid, like on the Heat side in that summer league game. Like, okay, we know this is something he can do. Now in year one, we still got Hassan here. We just use you to screen, roll, play really good defense. But we now know, okay, that's part of your foundation. We can eventually tap into this if we continue to build this out. And so it's also important, again, depending on who the player is, like a guy that was drafted fourth, you may have more of that base versus second round guy, pick 54. Like that may not carry over to this team because he may not get that opportunity. But it's also fun to just kind of take those mental notes like, okay, I saw that this dude can do this. It may not be a high users thing yet. They may not need that from him, but that may be something that he can build off of. And so if it pops in a January game, it's like, oh, right. And then that, if that eventually becomes a consistent part of this dude's game in year two or year three, it's like, oh, I remember where these flashes came from. And I think that's where you zoom out with the summer league question, how you evaluate it and stuff. I think both of us have said, like, throughout the pod's history, like, it's about the flashes to a degree. Like, key in on what those flashes are, and you can kind of project what they may mean or may not mean from there. Don't get too stuck on what the box score says. It's going to be processed. It's going to be, okay, if this is a flash, like, is this a flash or is this something to build off of? And, like, that brings its own layer to dig into the more you watch. But as a starting point, like, keep those things in mind because they may pop up later.
I actually asked you a question based off that. You have a unique perspective. Has anything shifted for you when it comes to evaluating returning players or evaluating rookies in summer league? Is there anything that pops to you more now or anything you're looking for now? Or is it just time has done you well?
Not time has done me well. I would say the year two dude getting on ball reps is always going to be intriguing to me. And I think part of what I've had to figure out is how much of this is you are the best returning player. You are going to get the ball because you are the best guy and you already know the system versus we're giving you this because we want you to do more. And so like for Desmond Bain, and we've talked about this quite a bit, like he got pick and roll reps. It's like, all right, cool. For me, I was like, this is cool. How much are they actually going to let him run stuff? Cause he got Ja still. And I do think you're still best utilized off the ball. And lo and behold, like Desmond Bane is just a 20 plus point per game scorer now and running a whole bunch of actions and handoffs and stuff. It's like, okay, they had more faith in that. They saw more in that. I should have paid a little bit more attention to that aspect of it versus, oh, this is cool. I'm glad he's getting this runway, if that makes sense. So like in that regard, I give that a little bit more credence. For the young guys, now I think I also just do a better job of recognizing, okay, even if it doesn't lead to guy ran 8 pick and rolls a game in year one, now he's running 16 in year two. Even if it isn't that, it's recognizing, okay, he may not get the pick and roll reps. If he's this comfortable with the ball now, the closeout attacks may be better. Like figuring out how that stuff may translate in a different context. And I think that's how I ended up so high on what Keegan Murray was doing this summer. Where it's like, okay, no, I don't think he's going to start running 20 ball screens a game now. But if the handle is tighter and he's accessing the paint a little bit better, I feel better about what those closeout attacks are going to look like. And I think he's going to be an even more dominant off-ball player now because he's going to have the threat of the shot and the one or two dribble pull-up and getting all the way downhill and making a read from there if necessary. And so I think that's part of where my growth has started to come in that regard.
Fun.
I love the deadpan. That's tremendous content. We can move to the next question. This is going to come from Mel, who says, hey, guys, hope all is well. Still love the pod. Thank you. Wanted to ask / mini rant on the new in-season tournament. Okay. While I understand the attempt Adam Silver is going for fan interest and mainly revenue through ads and sponsors and such, has anyone in the mainstream media brought up or directly asked the fundamental issue of it? The Champions League in soccer makes sense and works because it has the best teams from different leagues around the world competing. Huh. So, Steve, I'll ask you, like, would you like to see, obviously not this year, but would you like to eventually see something like this expand to including other leagues? Do you think that's something that's possible?
You sure you want to ask me this first?
I'm curious about your answer. Should I be alarmed? Okay.
Nope. I just think logistically it's too hard. Like, I think there was a lot of cool opportunities they could do with the tournament. But then my brain went to TV and branding. And then my brain went to the scale of the schedule. And now I totally understand why they said, hey, Eastern Conference teams, y'all over here. Western Conference teams, y'all over here. And then y'all eventually meet up. And if y'all lose, y'all eventually just play each other. Like, we'll make it as easy as possible. So I just think that that puts a cap on how much you can do. The logistics hold me back with that. So I think I think there are some tweaks they may make to the in-season tournament based on what happens. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if we're ever going to get that grand scale type feel. Like, I don't even know if we're going to get, like, I don't think we see multiple leagues in this.
Got you. I think for me, like, I think the logistics point is a really good one. It's probably the biggest thing. I also think, I guess, tied to that, I wonder if instead of the in-season tournament, if it was like a summer tournament that like replaced the preseason or something, if they did it that way, maybe that would open it up to insert team plays like Barcelona or something. But because it's an in-season tournament, I think that makes the logistics even tougher, especially since the NBA over the past decade plus has really been intentional about, okay, how can we limit the amount of miles flown this season for teams? And how can we eliminate back-to-backs? And so now if you're adding like cross-continental trips and stuff, that makes it a little bit more complicated. So I'm with you. Like, I understand why the interest would be there for sure. Like, I'll be intrigued to see like NBA teams playing teams from other leagues and seeing what that looks like. But logistically, yeah, that does get a little bit tough.
And secondarily, all these games, except for what, the championship game for the regular season. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. You would have to make it your own thing for sure.
Sorry, Mel.
All right. Well, next question going to come from Sean, who says, first, thank you both for getting me into the W. I never skipped over the W sections of the pod in previous seasons because I just like hearing you talk ball, but I got tired of hearing you talk about it without knowing what was going on. So I hopped in during the playoffs last year and have been hooked since. I love it, so thank you. Always love getting messages like that. Watch the WNBA, folks. It's fun basketball. Anyway, actual question now. The Aces are insane, obviously, and Raquana Williams won them a finals game last year, I believe, but has played 0 minutes this season. Can they somehow get even better with her in the rotation? So, like, the short answer to this is yes, they can, because just
Oh, that man just took the Aces question. All right.
I tossed it at you first for the first two. I figured that you wanted to, you know. You want to take it. If you want to take it, you can. I ain't trying to step on no toes. My bad.
I'm playing.
Okay. Okay. Well, I do think just having another playable wing would be helpful, and having another shooter and a movement shooter in that regard would help. And having her there would unlock some more small ball lineup versatility for the Aces, which is scary for very obvious reasons. Beyond that, though, because they've had this success without her in the lineup yet, dealing with a back injury, and because they do have Kirsten Bell that they like and they've been giving rotation minutes to since the basically second week of the season at this point, I just keep getting back to this Aces team is amazing. They've been by far the best team in the league this year. They should be the favorites to win the title, etc. I keep looking at backup point guard for this team, and it's just like I just really worry about what would happen if Chelsea Gray or Kelsey Plum missed extended periods of time and what that could mean and how they may overtax one of the other two players left if one of those girls went down. And so I wonder, considering the success that they've had, Kirsten Bell, who's been playing the three or the four, and the salary slot that Raquana Williams holds right now, I wonder if the Aces even give consideration to, okay, can we turn Raquana into backup point plus flyer and split the salary up and do that? Or if they're just okay with their court route, which if it's the latter, then very understandable. But like, that's the secondary part that goes to my mind. But if Raquana is back and healthy, like, yes, this is absolutely a better team. More lineup versatility, more shooting. And ultimately, it's just tough to match up with the Aces if she's also there.
I mean, this is part of why the Aces are unfair. And it goes back to even them building all this. This is a team that won a championship and got better. Like, they just got better. They shored up their bench. They got players that fit what they want to do. They improved on what they were missing last year. And then they also got Candace Parker.
Yeah.
And, seems good. And that's where it's like, okay, they're adding to what's already very good. And they're unfair because they keep getting better. And they could still be better, which sounds wild to say when Asia Wilson shooting over 50%, Jackie Young shooting 57% from the field, Kelsey Plum shooting 50% from the field, Chelsea Gray shooting 51.8% from the field. But you want to take a look. Like, again, this stuns me every single time. Jackie Young has made a leap, and she is doing some historic things still with this shooting. Chelsea Gray is averaging more points right now than she did last year. More assists, shooting better from the field, and now shooting 45% from three. What am I supposed to do with that?
Lose.
Kelsey Plum, it was very easy to be like, oh man, you know, Kelsey had a great MVP candidate type season last year. Jackie Young has stepped up. Seems like Kelsey's taking... No! No, shooting 50% from the field. Just not making threes. Asia Wilson got better. I can go on.
And it's funny because, like, the version of Kelsey Plum not making threes is she is now shooting 38% from three this year, which is just... Like, dog, what do you do with that?
Yeah, I mean, and then they have all that offensive talent. I think Raquan is going to help them. I think it's more of a, hey, let's make sure she's right for the run we need to make. Mm-hmm. And I think there's probably more value there. For me, I think if you don't want anything to happen, but I think they trust their team and their guards so much. I think you see it with Bell getting more minutes. I think it would just be, okay, next woman up, let's go.
What a special group that has been assembled in Las Vegas, man. It's pretty cool. What a song.
That's crazy. Yeah, man. Yeah, I see how that question got through.
That's wild. All right, we'll move to the next one then. That's fine. This one's going to come from Dave. If a quote-unquote Nekias player is a high field / elite passing big, who are the idealized Nekias players in the W and in the NBA? There we go. I can speak. I guess to briefly answer that one, Candace Parker would certainly qualify as a big that can pass the ball or just has elite feel. Candace Parker counts. Alyssa Thomas would count. Get well soon, but Jessica Shepherd would also count. Very, very, very good passer and ball mover in Minnesota. Just hate that she's been out for as long as she's been out. But like beyond the passing, like I just generally enjoy fives that can do things with the ball. Like obviously the passing pops. But if you can operate as a hub, if you can also drive, if you can shoot, that's also a bonus. But like, if you have some ball skills, I am intrigued. So like, that opens up the door for like Shakira Austin, Ezzy Madbigore, bigs like that. That are super versatile offensively. And on the NBA side, I think the most idealized version would be Jokic for very obvious reasons. That man can sling the ball all over the lot, have a lot of fun watching Bam. Sabonis as a hub is also fun. Those would kind of be like the vibe for me, I guess. As those skilled bigs. Go ahead, Steve. Did you have a... That man leaned back like, all right, you got it.
Go ahead. No, I leaned back because isn't an Nekias player a 20 to 25-year-old wing size 6'6 to 6'9 who can dribble?
That is also a Nekias player. Can't confirm.
Jokes aside, I actually want to have some fun with this, Nekias.
Okay.
What do you think my player archetype that I value most highly is?
Oh, man. That was the second part of the question. The player role, the player archetype that Steve loves, values most highly. Like, for me, it feels like, and maybe this is just because of the arguments, not arguments, but the conversation that we've had on the pod. It feels like veteran big that does their job can also just be your vibe. Knows what he's supposed to do in the right spots. Helps connect things on both ends. But also, you love the defenders. Like, you had a 16-minute Davion Mitchell rant this rookie year. You love the dudes that get in the jerseys. What does that mean?
My player archetype is veteran big that does their job. What player fits this mold, Nekias?
You know, Mason Plumlee, DeAndre Jordan. You know, you got a couple in there.
All right.
Yep. Yeah, I think you also respect like the defensive anchors. I think anchors and connectors, I think, really do it for you.
Connectors. I always enjoy people who are able to connect the dots and just affect the game in multiple ways. Mm-hmm. Versatility is a big thing for me. So if you are someone who can defend multiple positions, you also have an impact on the other end of the floor in different ways. Mm-hmm. So my mind goes to bigs, like Bam Adebayo. His game is something that I appreciate and respect, where, hey, I can do all of these things defensively, but also you see the growth offensively. You have to deal with me as a roller, as a screener, dribble handoff. So I like versatile bigs. Mm-hmm. Shakira Austin, Ezzy Madbogore, that you already stated. Someone like, to tap into your veteran big statement, someone like a Lana Smith, the Drew Eubanks of the world, who come in, do their job solid.
See?
Out of here. I would say I do love active on-ball defenders. Go ahead, feed me that. What else? I'm trying to think. I appreciate a lot of the basketball players, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this is like, if I were to try and create one in a lab, mm-hmm. I'd probably just go with like Giannis or LeBron.
Who among us am I right?
You know what I mean? But like, I appreciate the guards who can manipulate defenses and make skip passes and just make reads and continue to grow on that. Like Dame season last year. I don't know if it's archetype, but I really appreciated that. Because what could you do? Pick and roll, pull up. Oh, you're at the level, drive pass, split. I like that. Guards who can make multiple things happen in pick and roll, that's fun. Surprised you didn't say Mike Conley.
That was leaving Mike Conley and Marc Gasol for you to bring up on your own.
No, I mean, that's, yeah. Give me them all day.
There you go.
All players like that. But yeah, that's fine. I have a question for you.
Okay, good. I have a question for you as well.
Completely random. Has your summer league archetype changed?
No.
You still like the same? You still have the same favorite?
I can't wait for this follow-up. Yeah, good. Yeah.
Oh, no, I was just curious. Because I remember just when I was younger, I really loved the scorers in the summer league. Mm. And now I still appreciate the scoring, but I'm also like, yeah, you was hooping. Good job scoring. I wondered if you had any changes where, like, I really used to boost this type of player, and now it's like, I get it, but also.
Oh, no, it's still going to be like the wing creators for me.
Ah,
in that regard. So that'll do it. My question for you before moving to the next question, if I can very briefly be respectfully messy.
Oh, no.
What is the player archetype you don't like?
Supposed shooter who can't shoot.
Mm.
Supposed defender who can't defend.
Steve said, I don't like the frauds.
Well, it's hard for me. I'm not going to say I dislike an archetype because I just think anyone who's able to impact the game in their own individual or unique way is mm-hmm. fun. I have more fun trying to figure out, okay, what makes them good than saying, hey, this doesn't work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the answer is probably no. But I have a strong dislike for a confident shooter that cannot make shots.
Mm. I see. Okay. Let's see where you were there. Last question we have is from Charlie. Considering modern spacing, I think the mid-range is more open than ever. In my opinion, prime Chris Paul would be the perfect guard to take advantage of these conditions, thinking push shots, floaters, drawing fouls with a defender at the hip, throwing lobs, etc. I was so high on Ja Morant coming out of Murray State because he was primed to take advantage of the spacing with a CP3-like bag, but with more athleticism and a better initial landing spot in Memphis. Darius Garland also is really good at manipulating defenses in the mid-range. Might be higher on him than Ja right now. It's an interesting take. What other young guards do you think had the potential to take advantage of today's mid-range? I think for me, like, maybe this is just recency bias because I saw him over the weekend, but Scoot Henderson seems pretty primed to take advantage of this if the shot and or floater really hits. And we talked about it on the pod earlier this week. Like, I was really impressed with how quickly he could get into those mid-range shots. How balanced he was, the elevation, relatively high release point that he had. I just feel like, okay, he's going to be someone that defenses won't be able to bother him on those shots. So if he gets good on those shots, good freaking luck. But they're already going to be trying to play off a little bit because they don't want him to get all the way to the rim. So if he's able to decelerate and get into those look cleanly, he should. It will just be on him to knock them down. So he counts. And then also, as he continues to learn how to shift speeds and stuff, like, this feels prime for Tyrese Maxey to eventually be able to kind of navigate in that space and really have defense on the loop because of how fast he is. Those were the two that immediately came to mind. Who did you have on your list?
I won't lie. Probably Cade Cunningham is the one I'm intrigued to see
this
and what he can do as far as the pace, the size, with reps, with timing, as their spacing gets better. I'm intrigued to see that. I think a lot of guards are doing a good job when teams are going drop. I think the biggest thing is going to be how does it evolve? Are guys going to be able to make these reads on their own, or are they going to go automatic? That's one thing you see in summer leagues. We're talking about it. Come off, let me snake. Well, that wasn't the point of the play. You got to rate that. So I kind of want to see what Cade does. Tyrese Haliburton, very fun. I mean, the guard play is excellent. So it's fun to watch these guys with different skill sets, different speeds, kind of attack drop in different ways.
All right, I got you. Thank you once again to those who sent in mailbag questions. And again, if you ever have basketball questions, just roaming around your brain, you want to get them out, you want to hear us talk through them, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. To close things out, Steve, do you have free throws?
Yes.
Awesome. Would you like to give your free throws?
Sure, man.
Okay.
So is this all who wants Tyler Hero or who wants Yusuf Nurkic?
It feels like there's more of a market for Hero than there is for Nurkic. I would be kind. So this feels more like who wants Nurkic. I think a three-team deal is going to be required for this.
Okay. Is the real problem that the teams that get involved also have something they want to get rid of?
That might also be part of the issue, yeah, with Brooklyn. Like, hey, y'all want Ben? Or actually, maybe not. We want to keep Ben. Let's see what it looks like this year in a different situation. Yeah, that's probably part of the calculus, yeah.
Chris Paul is holding out hope that there's a way for him to start next to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. What do you think?
I have some bad news for you, friend. I don't know if that's what Golden State is going to want to do. Like, you can talk yourself into, let's start Dre at the five. I don't think Golden State wants to do that. And so this feels more like Chris Paul closes more games than like Kevon Looney does this year. But that wouldn't surprise me if that's how it turns out. Starting, I don't think they're going to want to start that small, to be honest. So maybe a little bit of a push and pull there.
I got you. For any new dunkers out there, Nekias Duncan has stated that he loves Chris Paul more than some family members. How would you break the news to Chris Paul that's not going to happen?
You know, you've won almost every individual award except Sixth Man of the Year, and we think you have a great opportunity to do so this season.
Okay. I appreciate respect that. More meaningful, the silence with Redacted's trade request or the noise around Pascal Siakam?
The noise around Pascal Siakam. Because what exactly is Toronto trying to do right now? Because, like, I think you could have talked yourself into them either going all in or just kicking off the rebuild. Losing Fred and then also keeping Pascal, but, like, we don't know where the extension talks are. Like, all of that feels kind of odd. And now Pascal just has not been in Vegas this year. And so that could mean a multitude of things. It just feels odd. Huh? Also, I've had a hard time wrapping my head around like the Atlanta thing for Pascal. And now they just re-signed DeJounte, which we should have hit on that in the news. 4 years, $120 million extension for DeJounte Murray. How'd you feel about it? I was surprised.
Two thumbs up.
Yeah, that's like fair deal. Like I figured he would try to hit the market next summer and get the big bag, but fair enough. Fair play all around. But yeah, the Atlanta stuff, I don't really get. I think I just need to take a couple days to really wrap my head around like Pascal Siakam trade destinations, if that's where it ends up going.
I got you. Let's play a little start bench and replace. How about that?
Start, bench, and replace. Wow. Okay.
Trying to change the language. Start, bench, cut. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I got
you. Anthony Edwards, Zion Williamson, LaMelo Ball.
Oh, Lord. Well, I'd probably start Anthony Edwards. I start Anthony Edwards. I bench Zion. I think I replace LaMelo.
Okay. Tyus Jones, Trey Jones. And Patty Mills.
Okay. Start Tyus, bench Trey. We are trading once again Patty Mills, I guess.
Ah, I see. Carmelo Anthony, Paul George, Tracy McGrady.
Oh, God. I'm afraid I have some bad news. Is this like peak or how we doing this?
Peak.
Oh, if it's peak. Oh, I am sorry. I'm prepared to get yelled at if we're going peak. I probably start T-Mac, bench Paul George, replace Melo.
All right. Who goes into the eye test Hall of Fame first? Carmelo Anthony or Allen Iverson?
Oh, God. Probably the eye test Hall of Melo.
All right. More damaging if they tweet you, Asia Wilson or Kevin Durant?
More damaging is probably going to be Asia. I think Asia will just hurt your feelings. KD just comes with a whole bunch of other people that are trying to be seen by KD. And so that's more annoying.
Jason Tatum and Drake walked out together at Drake's concert in Boston. What's the best name for that potential tag team?
Oh, God. I don't... I don't know if I can touch that one. I ain't gonna hold you.
Okay, no worries. Give me yours. We'll circle back.
God. Okay. Over under 3.5 all W selection for the Aces this year.
Over.
Okay. So far this season, Dewana Bonner or Ryan Howard?
Ryan Howard's stretch has flipped it for me, but Dewana's okay. Been great.
All right, very cool. Brittany Sykes or Tiffany Hayes?
Brittany Sykes this year.
Okay. Diana Taurasi or Marina Mabry?
This is the rudest question that you've ever asked me. Actually, it's one of Diana Taurasi or Marina Mabry. Buddy, why did you do this to me? Why did you do this to me? Why is this the thing that you just did? Pass.
Ooh, one of those players passing more than the other. Last question that I had. Did the Andersons get tickets to the All-Star game?
Yeah, they went online.
Ah,
bloody seems to be easier that way.
Okay, all right. I got nothing for Drake and Jason Tatum. That's a very light tandem. Okay. folks, we've done it. I broke Steve. He got a free throw and a free throw answer. We did it.
All right.
Did you have a...
No, yeah, we're cooked.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot, potentially our last one. If you enjoy listening to us, you can find our episodes on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. You can or could have found us, I suppose. We also have... pod episode up on JJ Reddy's YouTube channel. We normally have an episode a week up there, so subscribe to his YouTube channel if you haven't already. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there, or just commenting on tweets that we don't want to talk about on our timeline, so we'll have some fun there. Join us for our Dunker Spot online watch parties. The link will be in the description. It should be hyperlinked, so if so, just click on that. Enter your information. It is free. No shenanigans. If not, just copy and paste the link to your browser. It's free. No shenanigans. We've been watching NBA Summer League things. We've been watching WNBA games. We'll be live. Or I assume we're going to be watching some W All-Star festivities this weekend. We are also doing a 2K sim a little bit later tonight to play through our own All-Star draft that we did last week for Team Wilson and Team Stewart. So that should be fun. But we're watching basketball. We're watching wrestling. We're watching reality television for whatever reason. We bounced around with tennis. We've watched some golf. We just hang out and have fun. We analyze some of the basketball games, but otherwise we're just vibing, talking about real life things as well. So come rock with us. Come have some fun with us. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
I mean, Pretty Deadly was right there.